This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network. You're listening to Loving the Earth Pollution Free Radio. Tonight joining us is Lou Shepherd, one of the founding members of Cancer Action New York. Good evening, Lou.
Hello, Don.
Yeah, it's been a long time, huh? 10 years almost now. We're only a few days really away from the start of Cancer Action. It was in January of 2000, and it's been a good 10 years. It's been great, you know, having you as somebody to work with. You're a member of Cancer Action New York who has focused very much on alternative health avenues for cancer prevention and for cancer treatment. Give us a little bit of your, you know, intro.
Okay. I worked as a chemical technician mainly for a big chemical company. I did that for 32 years. And after I was retired, I moved this part of the country, North Country, Canton, New York. And I've been here about 15 years. And one of the reasons that I got interested in this is because my wife got cancer in 2000, and it was colon cancer, and it was not very good, and not very much fun going through that with her, and she elected to go with the chemotherapy and radiation and that sort of thing, and all I could do was support her, and even though I didn't believe in that kind of thing, but it wasn't up to me to try to change her mind. So, anyway, it's been a hobby of mine to be interested in alternative medicine and kind of super health and that sort of thing for quite a long time. Probably more than 30 years. And even though I lived with my wife and we had a good life together, she didn't always do the things that I did as far as taking supplements and dietary things. But that's the way life is. Sometimes you have less influence on the people that you're the closest to. Okay?
Tell me, how did you come to, you know, what were the early stages of you getting so, you know, building that interest in alternative medicine? You know, where did that come from?
Well, it came a bit from my experience. As a child, I got a Staph aureus bloodstream infection, and that resulted in a chronic and acute osteomyelitis, which is a bone infection, and it took me a few years to figure out how I got it, but that's a big story, and I don't want to go into that too much, but I had my leg amputated when I was 18, and I started reading books by Adele Davis, and I think my oldest sister introduced me to that author, and I just got fascinated with reading all this stuff in there about how to eat healthily, and some of the books she wrote a series of books, and one of them I remember the title was How to Have Healthy Children, and I enjoyed that, and I've subscribed to a number of alternative health newsletters. I've lost track of how many I actually get, and I've gotten some and canceled them, and so that's where I'm at now. And I've also read a number of books on the subject, and so I have rather than what I think is an extensive library on the subject.
Well,
go ahead.
You've been sharing some of what you're reading, one of the books you're reading right now, and I just love having this opportunity to talk with you. Not only the times when we talk, you know, just you and I, but now especially when we can share it with the listeners.
Yes.
You're reading Cancer, Step Outside the Box by Ty Bollinger. What's the box, Lou? What's the box he's talking about?
Well, that's the box is the big three. That's the AMA, the FDA, and the big pharmaceutical companies. That's the big three. And if you happen to have a diagnosis of cancer, that's how you're going to be treated, either with surgery, radiation, or chemotherapy. And that's the only thing that the orthodox medical people are allowed to use. And that's dictated by the FDA, the AMA, and certainly the big pharmaceutical companies.
Okay? What? Just tell us about, you're about halfway through this great book. Tell us about the first half of the book. What really stands out for you? What do you want people to know about that you've been learning about from this book?
Well, this is the fourth edition of the book, and it was copyrighted in 2006, 2007, and 2009. It has a foreword in it by R. Webster Kerr, and that's K-E-H-R. And he has a website, www.cancertutor.com, where he helps people to select alternative cancer treatments. And the book if you are interested in getting the book, you can get it at a website, and that is www.cancertruth.net. Okay, the guy that wrote it, Ty Bollinger, he lost a number of his relatives to cancer. And I think the first one was his father, who got cancer. I think it was probably colon cancer it was stomach cancer in 1996. And he never survived the surgery. So his Ty and his wife were considering, when he recovered from the surgery, to take him to a clinic in Mexico for alternative treatment. But he never recovered from the surgery. And then his mother died of cancer, and, about seven members of his family died of cancer. And he himself is a CPA. And he says that CPAs are able to handle a lot of information and compile it. And so that's exactly what he's done in writing this book, so that anybody that's interested in pursuing this will not have to do all the work that he did to get all the information for the book. And, well, he tells about how these big three operate, and also he talks about how the medical colleges, medical universities, medical schools are controlled actually by big pharmaceutical companies. And if you were a medical school and you taught homeopathy or alternative kinds of medicine, you didn't get benefits or help from the big pharmaceutical companies, and by the pharmaceutical companies giving grants and stuff to the medical schools. That's how they pretty much have controlled how, you know, which ones are able to succeed, and also what they teach. And in fact,
an awful way of,
pardon?
Awful way of controlling education and knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And so, and even the further education of the doctors is provided by the pharmaceutical companies, which set up these big conferences and lush surroundings and that sort of thing, and, you know, kind of pay the whole bill, and so that they can teach all the, you know, continue to teach the doctors all about their new pharmaceuticals.
Let's get back to that trip to Mexico that Ty Bollinger had intended for his father if he had survived that initial surgery, that initial stomach cancer surgery. How did,
yeah.
You know, what's the whole story about where that, you know, that clinic came from?
Well, that was the Haxi therapy, and that all got started because the senior Mr. Haxi was a horse breeder, and he wound up with a horse with cancer. And what he observed was the horse would select very specific plants in the pasture to eat. And as a consequence, the cancer went away. And so him and his son started treating other animals with this kind of treatment. They called it the Haxi treatment, and actually it was a extract of these plants that his horse had selected in the pasture. And then he started treating people with it and curing them. And this was, you know, I think back in the 30s. So he was able to get away with that. And then they finally, when he died, his son took over, and they had a clinic in Texas. I don't remember the name of it, but when the authorities, that is the FDA and those kind of guys, found out they were treating people and, you know, and this guy didn't have a doctor's degree or a medical degree, and so that they would arrest him on practicing medicine without a license. And I think he was probably charged with that about 200 times, but he kept treating people. And they tried to make out that the guy was a charlatan and just doing this for money, but they couldn't prove that because this clinic would treat everybody regardless of whether they had money or not, and that is money to pay for the treatment.
Yep.
And so when they kind of put them out of business, and a nurse that had worked for them for a long time took over this clinic and moved it to Mexico where she could continue to treat people. And then when she died, a sister took it over, and it's still in operation today. I don't know exactly what it's called, but certainly if you get your hands on this book, you'll be able to figure that out. I think he has an appendix with all the different alternative cancer clinics that are available. Okay?
Well, one of the best things I've heard about Mexico in quite a while.
Yeah.
It's nice to have some place where Americans can go to continue doing good work like that.
Yeah, and I think it was located in Tijuana, which is just across the border in Mexico.
Not too much a trip for any Americans that want to try out. Sounds like a very effective way of, you know, it's kind of cool the way it's so serendipitous like that, you know, that this, you know, someone was observing a horse that they cared about that had a horrible disease and then learned so much from that just by being observant and, you know, just thinking about, you know, what it all meant.
Yeah, right.
Thinking is such a cool part of, you know, how we can make progress in these things we don't really understand, and yet we want to, you know, understand and solve the problem.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to tell you about Dr. Stanislav Berzinski. Now, he's an MD, and he is also a PhD, came from Poland. And he discovered that cancer people had certain peptides in their blood. And either that or they lack certain peptides. I don't know if I got that straight or not. But anyway, he developed a way of producing these peptides, and he named his treatment the anti-neoplaston treatment. And the first, I think, the University of Alabama tried to buy this from him, but he refused to sell it. And then the FDA got on his case, and they tried to put him out of business. At one time, they I had over 30-some charges against him, and I don't know how many lifetimes he would have been sentenced if he had been convicted, but he was able to... the judge found him innocent, I believe, and the FDA had spent millions and millions of dollars persecuting and prosecuting this guy, and he's still able to operate a clinic in someplace in Texas, but has he has to operate under very, very strict rules put down by the FDA. But one of the things about his particular treatment is that it's species-specific. That is, it will work on people. And in order to get any cancer drug past the FDA or approved by the FDA, you have to use that your treatment on a particular strain of mouse. Well, obviously, if the treatment that he's developed is species-specific, it certainly wouldn't work on a mouse, and therefore he would never, ever, under the current rules, get FDA approval for using this treatment.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting how that so many rules can't, you know, create as much good as people just trying to solve problems and trying to protect people's health and trying to cure these horrible diseases that people all want to get better from. All the rules in the world can't get that done, and yet these people that are out there, you know, stepping outside the box are certainly getting it done.
Yeah, right. Well, let me tell you a little bit about the statistics. I think the author of this book is generous when he says that the treatment used by orthodox medicine is about 3% successful. And success is determined if the person who is diagnosed lives 5 years after the diagnosis. Well, since they're able to diagnose cancer earlier, then that extends that, you know, the time that they could actually live from the time they start the treatment.
Yep.
So that helps with the statistics that they use. And then I just read a very disturbing one about how they, I think the leading cause of death from cancer is lung cancer.
Yes.
But they don't use those, any of the statistics for lung cancer in determining the success of their treatments. How about that one? And here's another one that I just read, and that is if you sign up 10 people for a cancer protocol, And nine of those people, and the protocol is consists of treatment for 60 days. If nine of those 10 people die before they complete the protocol, they are eliminated from the statistics. And so only one then supposedly would get added to those statistics. That is a, a pretty bad way of maneuvering numbers.
Right. Yeah, certainly
a guy with a CPA is going to see through that.
Yeah, it's good that he wrote that book. You were telling me about how the Memorial Sloan Kettering has operated in the past with regards to these alternative treatments. Can you share some of that, you know, about the way of treating, you know, the alternative drug, for lack of a better word, the alternative biochemical that was developed at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and then it just, like, couldn't get beyond that?
Yes. I'll tell you about that. I read about that in in remarks in this book, and also in another book called The Cancer Industry, written by Ralph Moss. And Ralph Moss was a information specialist at Memorial Sloan Kettering. And while he was working there, there was a researcher that was using a he was testing a compound, I think, called amygdalin. And he was testing this on mice that had tumors. And this compound is found in apricot pits. And it also has the name Laetril. Okay? So Ralph Moss was all ready to make a media announcement about this and how the success of this researcher in using this stuff. And his bosses told him to not do that. And they said, told him not to do that in no uncertain terms. And not only did they tell him not to, they wanted him to lie and tell the public and the media that this had failed, totally failed. And it wasn't too long after that that he actually got fired. But before he got fired, he was making an investigation on why did they want him to lie about this. And as it turns out, the reason they wanted him to lie about it, because it was a natural substance. It was not patentable by any of the pharmaceutical companies, and certainly not by Memorial Sloan Kettering. And so therefore, they had to eliminate it, even if it was the best thing to come along in a good many years. They had to eliminate it because nobody could make big money on it. And after Ralph Moss was fired, he found his office locked, all of his records confiscated, and he was escorted out of the place by two security guards. But fortunately, his wife had made copies of all of the stuff, all of the research he had done, and that was the start of the book, The Cancer Industry, that he wrote, which I have a copy of, and it came out a good many years ago. Okay?
Explain a little more about this connection here that we're talking about. How did the pharmaceutical companies, how did they get to the people, you know, at Sloan Kettering that, you know, employ, you know, this Mr. Moss?
Well,
where's the power, you know? Where's the connection?
Oh, the power the power is in the board that controlled this institution. And 7 out of the 9 people on that board had very strong connections with the pharmaceutical industry. And, of course, the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center was also buying stock in these pharmaceutical companies, and they were making money on the stock, too. So, some of the people on the board were connected with the media. I think one was on the New York Times. Another one was NBC, from NBC. So they not only did they this board was made up of people that represented the pharmaceutical companies and also the media. So they were able to control what was happening at Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Yep. Do you think that this is pretty widespread? Have these business interests, these powerful corporations, have they taken control of so many parts of the economy and the society and the media, you know, in particular, and these hospitals that people really depend on for health care, and say parts of government as well, like FDA and EPA and all these government regulatory entities? Has industry been successful in getting control of all of those parts of our society here in the United States?
Well, I believe they have. And also in this book, he tells about the strong connection between the FDA, the National Cancer Institute, and the American Cancer Society. And I believe that's true. In fact, one of the chemo drugs that my wife was given was 5-FU or something like that. And I learned that every time that was used, the American Cancer Society got a kickback. They made money on getting that chemo drug used. Now, I think an organization that calls themselves a nonprofit organization and supposedly they're trying to find a cure for cancer, I think that's a conflict of interest. Absolutely.
And I've been looking carefully at the public information that the American Cancer Society sets forth, in particular on its website.
Yes.
And they make it very clear that prevention, this prevention to reduce the cancer burden, is their number one priority now. And it just doesn't square with so much that we know about ACS.
That's absolutely true. In fact, I think that with these organizations, prevention is almost a curse word, and it's totally foreign to most of the allopathic doctors, for sure.
And it's because there's no money in it. It's
no money
you can
in it.
Sell,
no.
You know.
No. And in this book, he lists the qualifications for an alternative treatment. It has to be a natural substance. It has to not cause serious side effects. And, it's not patentable. You know, it just goes on and on and on with all the reasons, all the things that, qualify for an alternative treatment.
Well, it just seems that we're... From these books that you have been reading, you've been really helping me see the bigger picture and get a more clear sense of just what we're dealing with in trying to bring cancer prevention to the forefront in, you know, in this society, you know, here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And in
New
York State.
Well, it's I'll tell you, it's a pretty big task because you're up against quite a propaganda machine, and that is I'm talking about the media.
Yep.
They've got people convinced that there's a drug for every disease, and if there's not a disease, they'll invent a disease for the drugs that they're making. And another thing that they do is when a drug is about ready to go out of control of a patent, why, they will market another drug that's very similar to it, and chemically it may be just a mirror image of the one that's where the patent is running out. And then they will put the one that the patent's running out, they'll put that on the over-the-counter market, and then they'll charge a tremendous amount for the new one. And actually there's no real difference in them. But chemically, they can claim there's a difference and therefore get another patent. But that's
going on
all the time.
How are we going to get away from all the greed, you know, that's just basically been running our country and our health system and our, you know, basically running, you know, parts of the country that we need to protect our health, and like FDA and like EPA and ACS. ACS should be doing a far better job of protecting our health than what they're doing. How can we get the greed out of that and just do all these things of, say, prevention and treatment in this way that's not focused on greed, but it's focused on creating good health for people here in New York and in the rest of the country?
Well, Don, if I knew the answer to that, why, I would act on it.
Well, I'll tell you, I think we've been gradually figuring it out.
Yeah,
it is all about people that are greedy doing these things.
Yeah.
You know, you and I doing this interview tonight. You know, there's no money.
Yeah.
There's, you know, it's just because we know it's right and we believe in it. We are well informed, and we know that people can benefit from it. So we're putting it out there and getting it done. And just, you know, by the same token, you know, by the same paradigm, the other people that are educating. I get a call from Luann Panisi. She's with the Metropolitan Wellness Center in Manhattan. And she's agreed to do an interview on, she considers herself to be, and she certainly is, a well-established holistic nurse. And a holistic oncology nurse. And she's going to give me an interview next week. So this is happening, you know. And getting better and better information out there that people can use. You know, the Internet's been a big help. These online newsletters, this, you know, these, even the websites where, even the websites of, say, like ACS, there's some okay information on there, and you can look at it and figure it out. And the stuff that is misleading and, you know, basically tells the story that pollution doesn't cause cancer, I'm challenging them on that, and they are starting to feel the heat from that. So there are really a lot of ways that we are beginning to succeed in getting beyond this greedy, dumb old, bad old ways of the past, and this is a new millennium, and cancer actually started in 2000, January of 2000. Here we are 10 years in almost, and things are a lot better than they were back in 2000, you know?
Yeah. Well, all we can do, I guess, is just keep plugging away and chipping away, and we may be able to do it.
Well, what about that quote from Margaret Mead? That's a good time to roll that out.
Yeah, well, can you remember it? I don't.
I recall it is something like this. A few people, never doubt that a few people can bring great change, you know, basically create a revolution in something they're very intent upon. That's the only way it's ever been done.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty close to it.
Yeah, that's pretty close,
yeah.
But anybody wants to check it out, all they have to do is get on do a Google search, and they can get it exactly.
And I believe in it because I can feel it, that we are one of those small groups of people that is bringing some great change.
I hope so.
Do you have anything else? Anything else you want to tell the listeners?
Well, I certainly would recommend this book. I've read a lot of books about cancer and other ways of treating cancer and that sort of thing, and I think this one is right up there at the top because it's over 400 pages, and he's got a lot of good information in there, and he's done a lot of the work for us, so that it makes it a lot easier for us to step outside the box.
Okay, give us the name of the book and the author one more time.
Okay, it's Cancer, Step Outside the Box, and it's by Ty Bollinger.
Okay.
And I certainly do recommend it, and we could do this again after I read some more of it.
Yeah, we'll get the second half of the book for sure.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, I just want to say one more thing. Honor to the people who have had loved ones, whether they be this animal like that horse of, that one researcher, or whether they be family members like with your wife and with like those many members of that other person's family that died of cancer, brought that issue so fully into the living ones' lives, and then those living ones really jumped in and have done so much to reduce the cancer burden and make this less a problem in the future for all of us. Honor to him. Honor to you, Lou.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a great night.
Yeah, you too.
Yep.
Bye.